ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liberty Unbridled. I'm your host, Ken Loman, and this is the My View Matters Radio Network. I was busy around the house today, and it was kind of entertaining because I ran around like a man person, doing all kinds of stuff, and about, 6:25 or so, looked up at the clock and went, oh, my, I need to prepare for the show. Kind of forgot it was even Sunday. It's been one of those weeks. Anyway, welcome to the show, folks. This is Liberty Unbridled, and I am Ken Mulman. Let's see here. To get started, let's just go ahead and do like we do every week and get started with the randomly generated political rhetoric from the random political rhetoric generator. This week's randomly generated political rhetoric is, I want an America where 24-hour news networks and Muslim extremists can't undermine our sacred constitution. That actually sounds like something someone would say. Hey, you know, randomness means that sometimes it comes up with something that somebody would actually say. This week's the spurious correlation for this week is that the number of juvenile arrests for possession of marijuana in the United States is inversely correlated with eBay's total gross merchandise volume for the years 2007 to 2009. So basically, if you listed something on eBay, you are responsible for keeping kids out of jail on possession of marijuana? That's the whole point of this is to show that correlation is not correlation is not causation, and that just because something happens to correlate doesn't mean there's a causal relationship there. And that's the reason we bring that up. Let's see here. So the one thing I forgot to do again this week, and I apologize for those of you that actually like to use the chat room, is fire up the chat room. So I'm going to fire that up in case it hasn't been done already. And, of course, you can talk in the chat room with other folks. Co-host Dave tends to hang out in the chat room as well. But I'm not going to see the chat room because, well, I'm busy doing the show. So if you want, you can join in there. And obviously you can call us here at 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And I hear a handful of things that I've been trying to get around to on issues and things like that that I wanted to hit tonight. One of the big ones for me is it is a frustration point for me because of the people that say, well, we've always had a two-party system. They act like we've always been the same thing from the founding to today. Nothing's changed. Why, we still have the exact same thing we've always had. We've always had Democrats and Republicans. We've always had this. We've always had that. And the reality is we haven't ever always had anything. Everything has changed. The only thing that is really the same is that we have a government and we have some sort of governing document, pretty much it. From the country's founding, you know, we had, and I've given this speech actually a long, long time ago at a public event. I gave a speech explaining how we're actually on our fourth government here. And people look at me kind of funny, and I say, no, really, we are. Technically, you could say we're on our fifth government here, because first, we were a territory of Britain, right? And we were under British rule and subject to their rules and whims and of the king and whatnot as colonies of Britain. Then after we broke away, we were under the Articles of Confederation for over a decade. That's something that kind of gets forgotten a lot, the Articles of Confederation, that were our first form of government. That's something that's, people like to conveniently forget that we had that. No, it's always been the same. Yeah, not so much. The Constitution, it's still there. Or the Articles of Confederation was there. Then in 1789, you have the Constitution coming into play. And so that is the third government, basically, that is lived under at this point. And the Constitution laid out very basic things. The key thing is the relationship between the federal government and the states. And that's what's changing along the way here, actually, in every step of the way. But the Constitution outlines greater powers for the federal government. And in response to that, the folks that were against the Constitution, that wanted to keep the Articles of Confederation, created the Bill of Rights. They were known as the Anti-Federalists by the media at the time. They wanted to preserve the Articles of Confederation. They didn't want to replace it with the Constitution. But the people who were known as the Federalists, who wanted to replace the Articles of Confederation with the Constitution, won the day. But the consolation prize was that the Anti-Federalists were able to put the Bill of Rights together. And so the reason we have the Bill of Rights is because of the folks that wanted to keep the Articles of Confederation. Now, this is kind of an important fact that isn't really taught to many people. And there's some really good literature out there. There's good things to go track down if you're interested in learning more about this. I'm just going to give the summary version. But so that was the another revision, right, of the relationship between the states and a federal authority. And then the next major change came in the wake of the Civil War, kind of during and after the Civil War, when states seceded from the Union, which was the government of the U.S. Constitution. And those states that left brought back their own version of the Articles of Confederation, which anymore when you think about the Confederacy, that's what people are thinking of, is the Articles of Confederation, the Confederacy that existed in the South during the Civil War. But that's not where the original government, as soon as we broke away from Britain, was a Confederacy as well. So the Articles of Confederation was, the second time around, was what the South created to govern themselves. And the North obviously continued with the Constitution, which after the South was defeated, there were several amendments that were basically forced upon the Southern states. And it's important, let me back up just a hair here. It's important to note that under the original Constitution, there weren't just two parties. Now, at the creation of the Constitution, there were two general groups, right? There was the group for the Constitution and the group for keeping the Articles of Confederation. And so you could say they were two parties, but they really weren't. And in fact, after the Constitution went on, but before the Civil War, there was actually a point where the Federalist Party died. And it just basically fell over and died under its own stupidity because they supported the Alien and Sedition Acts and a few other things that were very unpopular. And so that party couldn't win office. And so what ended up happening was all the people who just wanted to win moved over to a party that had become known as the Democratic Republicans that had been started by Jefferson and some of the Anti-Federalists. And they all became Democratic Republicans, which was just a single party. And then under Andrew Jackson, that split into two pieces. And then leading up to the Civil War, there were actually multiple parties that were forming around different issues and different regions of the country and different things. So then you had the Civil War, and the Civil War galvanized the country. But even during the Civil War, in an era where you had a galvanized yes or no question almost, you had actually three parties. You had the Republicans, which was a brand new party formed out of the death of the Whig Party that had been formed in 1858, the Republican Party, and then you had two different factions of the Democratic Party, which, understand, remember, the Democratic Republican Party had existed prior, had actually split into two pieces as well. So a party splitting in half and becoming two separate things wasn't anything new. So you had the Northern Democrats and the Southern Democrats and the Republicans. And so really, there were three parties that were there. And an interesting fun fact that a lot of people don't realize, before the parties really controlled the way things worked, the party that Lincoln ran under for re-election, he didn't run as a Republican for re-election. He ran as a Unionist Party candidate. And that was done on purpose to basically say that if you were voting against him, you were voting against the Union. And so understand that the parties as they existed were not really the same thing. Also, things were a lot different on how party operations worked was very much not a top-down control. It was a whole different system. So anyway, even in the wake of the Civil War, you did end up basically with two parties when it came back out of the Civil War. You had the Democrats and the Republicans. But within the Republican Party, there were actually two different groups. There were the Radical Republicans, and they wanted to push to, punish the South for the Civil War and all that stuff. And in fact, the Radical Republicans did not like that Lincoln was not going to push for hardcore sanctions and whatnot. Fast forward a few years, new parties again start to form. You've got new developing so-called third parties, but they're sending people to Congress. Right? And this is important to note, that even Congress was not two parties and only two parties throughout this entire period for the most part, except during the Civil War when Congress was much smaller and galvanized and everything else. But the point is that it was possible for people other than the two big parties to get into Congress, and they were. And that all kind of led up until the Progressive Era, the turn of the 20th century. And at that point, new laws started being put in place in different places around the country that specifically clamped down on ballot access and made it harder for people who are not part of a major political machine to actually make it to the ballot, to be even able to run for office. In the past, these rules, the ballot access rules, the ballot rules, voting was really simple. People had a piece of paper, and you would write down who you wanted, and you put it in a box. It was really simple. There were no filing fees. There were none of this silliness. That all came later, and it all came in an effort to control elections. And that brings us to what is referred to commonly as the Progressive Era, and the Progressive Era amendments that occurred that, again, specifically changed the nature, the relationship between the states and the federal government. And so once again, we see that the states, and in each of these, the states basically lose power. I shouldn't say that. Under the Articles of Confederation, as compared to British control, the colonies, then states, gained power from the centralized authority. But after that, every change that has occurred has been the states losing power. In fact, in the Progressive Era, as you should know, the income tax came along, and then also the Senate was no longer elected by the state legislatures. The Senate had been elected by individual or by people at large. And that's important. And people will say, well, that's a good thing, right? Well, not really. And let me explain. Number one, one of the other things they did was they capped the number of people in the U.S. House of Representatives at 435. That is an artificial cap that Congress has put upon itself. There's nothing in the Constitution that says that they cannot do that. There's actually a group out there that believes that the Constitution states they shouldn't have been able to put that cap. Now, I disagree with that group. I do think from a public policy standpoint it's bad, but I don't think the Constitution prevented it. The point is that they capped the representatives of the people, right? The House of Representatives is supposed to be a group of representatives, people that represent the average American. But as we've scaled, when this occurred, there were about 100 to 110,000 people per congressman, per U.S. House congressman. Today, there's over 700,000 people per congressman. And the reality is, a congressman can't know all 725 or 700-something thousand people that they're supposedly representing. How can you represent someone that you have no knowledge of? I mean, you can look at aggregates. You can look at different things. You can claim, well, the election says that I obviously represent them the best. But in the rigged election systems that we have, best doesn't mean squat. It just really, most of the time, means second worst, right? It's important to realize, and this is a really long history lesson to get to the point, that the system has changed significantly along the way. And the reason it's important to know that is because the system we have today is broken, and people recognize that. And it's not that the system has been broken all along. Certainly, there have been flaws all the way through. We're human beings. We're we're not perfect. We're not infallible. We will make mistakes. But as things continue to get worse, and they are getting worse, we'll get to that in a moment, it's important to remember that where we came from and what has caused the problems we have now. I mean, the Congress, the whole idea, you know, the big deal this time was about how McConnell was going to be the majority leader in the Senate. That whole concept of minority and majority leaders and all that, that didn't come until the 1920s, man. I mean, think about that. It's been less than 100 years that's supposedly been around. When people try to say that's been there from the start, no, it hasn't. And so as things are still messed up because we're still in recession, I just looked at the latest BLS stats right before the show. We're still at 62.8% employed of the people that should be able to work. So we still have what I would call a real unemployment rate of 31.5%. And now we've got some, whenever economic times are bad, you've got the kindling for really bad things. And the more kindling, the longer the bad times go, the more the kindling piles up. And what I worry about, my concern at this point, is that we are seeing some serious concerns. We've seen what's happened in Ferguson. We've seen what's happened in Cleveland with a 12-year-old kid. We saw what happened in New York with the guy selling cigarettes, where people are now very, very upset. And they have a right to be upset, especially the New York case. I don't know how they did not indict that guy. I'm sorry, he did a chokehold. Whether he wants to call it a chokehold or not, it was a chokehold. And whatever. The reality is that whole thing was stupid. The whole thing was over him selling cigarettes. And understand, Rad Lubalka had a great saying that he had posted online about laws in general, right? And why is it important to recognize that when you pass a law, it's not just, I just want it to be this way, so I just want to pass a law. What does it really mean to pass a law? And what that really means is that you're giving the state the authority to force people to do things that if they refuse to do, you have given the state the authority to kill that person if they refuse. And it sounds extreme, but it's true. And this case in New York shows that. That is, in fact, you know, as dumb as a pack of cigarettes or an individual cigarette, which is what apparently they were selling as what they call Lucy's, which is, yes, sell an independent cigarette or an individual cigarette to someone. But that's the deal. And these taxes, the taxes are not legitimate on the cigarettes in New York. They are punitively high in order to control behavior. It's an attempt at social engineering that has led to approximately 60% of the cigarettes being sold in New York, being sold, quote-unquote, black market, which is avoiding their crazy taxes, right? So the point, I guess, and let me see if I can find this quote here real quick. This is from Radley Balka. It's a great quote. Every law, no matter how seemingly innocuous, is enforced with the threat of violence. If you fail to follow it, the state is saying it reserves the right to use violence to force you to comply and or force you to submit to a penalty for violating the law. Every law passed also creates more opportunities for interaction with police officers, the people entrusted to use the violence necessary to enforce the laws. How a proposed law will be enforced and potentially abused ought to be considered in addition to the content of the law itself. And I think that this is a really good quote. And the reason I say that is, you know, we've talked at this show, on this show in the past a lot about the smoking ban nannies, right? And what are we willing to do? What is it? They're trying to use the police. They're trying to use government, which is supposed to keep people from harming each other directly without permission, to instead control individual behavior, benefit, supposed benefit of society. But in reality, and we've talked about this at length in the past, these people are just morally opposed and offended by the sight of cigarette smoke. And so it's important to remember as we go through all this that the laws that are passed, the laws that people push for, are the core problem. In my realm, we call it the root cause. Because in IT, when there's a problem, we look for the root cause. Symptoms don't mean squat. Whether it's in Ferguson with the encounter, right? Whether it's in Cleveland, whether it's the New York, the guy with the smoking, with the cigarettes, whatever it is, right? What was the root cause? What actually triggered this course of events? And it's important to dig deep and dig into these issues to find out what the root cause was. Because if you don't resolve the root cause, then you don't solve the problem. You're just treating the symptoms. It's, how do I explain it? Let's see here. In medical terms, right, if I got a big old splinter and it's really, really hurting, and the doctor just says, go take some Tylenol, well, yeah, the Tylenol might take the pain away, but it hasn't solved the root problem, the giant splinter that I have, right, or whatever it is. The point is that the goal is to try to solve the root cause. Now, some root causes cannot be accounted for, cannot be resolved. Fine. They can't be resolved. But then they must be accounted for. And how do you account for those things? And how do you work towards solving the root cause? And these are things that need to be done. So I do agree with the direction of putting body cameras on the police officers when they're engaged in official actions. Because what that does is it makes sure that there's a mechanism to review what's going on, especially in the case of an encounter. Now, there are some issues with that. Number one, and this is something that somebody brought up that I thought was really good, what happens if during the course of official police business, someone has to enter a residence? Do the body cameras count for what privacy protections? And this is where it goes. What Fourth Amendment protections are being afforded if the body cameras are rolling tape while somebody's going through for other purposes, other legitimate purposes, through someone's private property? What protections are there from just that information being made public? Maybe there's no crime, but I don't want people to see the inside of my house. Right? Is that information available via public record request? These are all really good questions and things that do need to be resolved. And in general, privacy concerns, boy, we need to address a lot of privacy concerns. But I think that body cameras themselves at least give us the ability to see the full story. We saw the full story in that case in New York because someone else videotaped it. And entertainingly and sadly, the person who videotaped it is the only one who actually was charged with a crime. Now, it was a separate crime, not related to that, but the gentleman who's been charged believes that the charges are being trumped up and that they're being targeted because they took this video. And that may very well be. You know, the problem with having power is that you can abuse it. And I'm not saying that they are. I'm saying they could. And so body cameras are a good first step. but it's not the end-all, be-all. It's not going to solve all the problems. There are lots of other problems. We have to ask questions like, why are half of these things even crimes? Right? Or here's a better question. Why are they even trying to take this guy into custody? Just issue him a stupid ticket and go on. Whatever. It's more than just watching the watchers. In many ways, it's watching ourselves. Why was this a law to begin with? Why is it that New York City has decided that they were going to charge $9 in taxes on a pack of cigarettes, which then enables this whole scenario to begin? Who is the root cause of this? The root cause, honestly, was really bad public policy, which was trying to control individual behavior through ridiculous taxation. Because obviously, people are finding a way around it, just like they always do, the black market. If you ban a market or make it ridiculous, another black market will pop up to service. If there's a consumer, it's going to happen. And that's what happened. So in the case of New York, anyway, we know because we saw all of it go down, and that's the one we have the most information about. The New York scenario was completely avoidable. It was avoidable. The officer could have just said, look, dude, here's your ticket. Get effed and go away, right? Move on or else I will arrest you for trespassing. I saw parts of the video. It's been a while since I've seen it. But the point is that there was a way to de-escalate that situation. I've talked to a number of officers and about this issue of escalation versus de-escalation, and that's something I think is sorely lacking all the way around, is the skill of de-escalation. And the good thing that came out of the New York situation, and I heard this on the radio, that the police chief there specifically said that they will be training the officers on how to de-escalate a situation. I think it was New York, it may have been Ferguson, one of the two, I forget which, honestly. I heard on the radio, I was driving, whatever. But that's what we need. That's, from the police side of things, that's what they need to be trained in, how to de-escalate a situation and just, get what they need to do done, but de-escalate at the same time. Don't be in somebody's face. Don't be like, no, man, I can tell you what to do. Don't push the situation. From our side, we can stop making so many asinine laws. We need to focus on what's important, and especially now that we're this deep into a recession, we really, really, really should be focusing on what's important. We don't have the money to be enforcing asinine laws. Seriously. We don't. We don't even have the money to maintain our infrastructure. How are we supposed to be maintaining all these asinine laws that don't matter? Because at the end of the day, if you prioritize things, what's more important to you? Having a road that you can drive on or a $9 a pack cigarette tax? What's more important to you? I know what's more important to me. And that's what's going to have to change. We're going to have to change how we think. We're going to have to change how laws are enforced. And there's just so many different things that have to change. Concern is that in all of these rallies and protests and everything else going on, I don't see that the public is demanding these things. Maybe it is happening. Maybe it's just bad reporting, which is, dude, it's entirely possible. I've been in the media. I know. But that's what we need. We need better, for what I'm looking for. We need everything to be better. That's what it comes down to. And part of that starts with us. So, it's 7:30. Yeah, it's bottom of the hour. All right, let's take a break. Let me come back. We'll bring co-host Dave on. Your calls, if you'd like, go in here now at 858-683-1326 during the break. If you want to talk, be sure to hit that one key once you're in the queue. Otherwise, I think you're just listening, which, by the way, totally cool to listen that way, too. Doesn't matter to me. But you are listening to Liberty Unbridled on the MyView Matters Radio Network, and we'll be back here in just a few moments.
First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the MyView Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, we're back. You're listening to Liberty Unbridled here on the My View Matters Radio Network, and if you'd like to call in, you can do so at area code 858-683-1326, and be sure to press the number 1. Like our caller in queue has here, and caller, you are on the air.
Are you talking to me, Ken?
I am, Don. How you doing?
I am doing fine. It's been a while since the election, and I was hoping that there'd be some libertarian-oriented Republicans elected, but I haven't heard of anything. Have you?
No. That's actually probably a good topic for another night to kind of go over how the parties actually probably would have been good to do tonight since I started on that. But continuing from where I was tonight, how the parties have locked down and clamped down control, and they were firmly in control of the message and the types of people that are getting through their primaries.
Because I remember a couple of years ago we were getting people like Amish and Massey, and I'm just wondering if they even closed down those loopholes.
Supposedly in other states, there were some supposed liberty folks on the Congress side. But, you know, the problem at this point, Don, is that people throw liberty around like it's going out of style, you know. And so what is a liberty candidate at this point? That's a really good question, I think, for a lot of folks. Oh, that guy's for liberty. Really? What does he stand on? Well, you know, he wants to incarcerate everybody who walks across the border. Oh, yeah, liberty.
Yeah. So I
know
that Mexico is supposedly going to be having an election, and England will be having one as well. And I follow foreign sites to see whether, you know, there's some of us involved in those elections, et cetera. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, they use the same tactics the Republicans and Democrats do to keep, you know, libertarians in other countries off the ballot, et cetera. You know, that kind of...
They do different types of gerrymandering because they have different systems. Now, Mexico,
right.
I'm not as familiar with. In Britain, obviously, they have a parliamentary system. They've got it all divided
right.
up in weird ways. It's a totally different system. I did follow Australia. I guess it was last year had theirs.
Uh-huh.
And Australia actually did get basically their version of a libertarian
mm-hmm.
into office.
Right.
Into theirs. And David, I can't remember his last name. He's been really interesting to watch because he's really shaken things up. And entertainingly, and interestingly, a lot of the younger Australians are like, "Wow, you know, this guy's actually like saying it how it is, and that's how I really believe." And he's really, really stirring up a movement in the right direction, at least based on what I can see from halfway around the globe.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I mean, the big thing that came out of the election, of course, is that we want, Alaska and Oregon, they now have it legal. D.C. is having it legal, but the Republicans are still trying to block that. And a couple of towns and cities have, you know, also voted for legalization. But it's amazing how, you know, even though we're the tide that's coming in, they still want to resist us. And so it's just they don't even have
sure.
political practicality on their side anymore. So
now the thing they have on their side is all these crazy rules they've dropped into place over the last 100 years.
Oh,
the progressive era.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how they're keeping control at this point. And that's exactly what the rules were set up to do, was to protect the parties that were in control at the time, which, surprise, surprise, for the first time in history, two political parties had survived 100 years. Because if you go over 100 years prior to that, those parties didn't last that long. They collapsed. They fell apart. Yeah, the Democrats kind of kept their name, but they weren't the same party. these rules were put into place to protect those two parties, and they have done so.
Yeah, and the parties have also changed within those 100 years themselves. So you have that problem. I mean, and of course, you know, where are the Blue Dog Democrats going to go? They're an endangered species right now. I just want to change the subject for a moment. I heard an excellent speaker at a Tea Party event who was talking about Common Core. And I think this is something that, you know, maybe we can, let's say, at the next state LP convention, we could have a speaker about that.
Yeah, or, I mean, actually, I'd like to bring somebody on the show to talk about that, because Common Core, we could fill up an entire multiple shows with the amount of stuff on Common Core, and I think one of the key things that was missed, the opportunity that was missed by those opposed to Common Core was not bringing the teachers on board early, when before they were basically told not to say anything, because the teachers that knew what were going on and that talked to me were very, very upset with Common Core and very, very upset with the way that all came together. So
okay, now, and when is our state convention this year, and where?
I don't know yet. No information available on that yet. So still in planning. So.
All right, well, post it as soon as you can, and I'll see if I can find a speaker for the Common Core thing. All right, great. Talk to you soon.
Don, take care. Thanks for calling in. And I see that co-host Dave here is on the line as well. Co-host Dave, welcome, sir.
Hey, Ken, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I'll tell you what, I'm tired tonight. I've been cooking and cleaning and doing all kinds of stuff around the house, and I don't know. I feel like I didn't do the two-party stuff quite justice. I kind of deviated into the other stuff, but it needed to be talked about. It's more topical and relevant. So, I don't know. What are your thoughts on everything?
Going all the way back to the beginning, you know, with what you started with there, really the only thing that I have to point out is it's a slight correction. It's just an oversight. Prior to, you were talking about the first government, you know, being colonial rule. I just wanted to point out that prior to colonial rule, there were countless tribal governments ruling this land.
That's true. And it is true that, but I guess what I was looking at more was, of the folks that came from Europe, that those were the European style of governments that were in place. We've evolved from colonial rule to confederacy to a constitutional republic to, I would say, less democratic, more republic form of government that is one that now, and as mentioned with Don, I think the only reason these two parties still exist is because the rules they created 100 years ago have made it so hard for anyone else to compete. You look at the popularity of either of the two major parties, and they're in the low 20s. Low to mid 20s
right.
is popularity. The Congress is like below 10. The president's below 40. He was in the low 30s last I looked. I mean, this is a government that, in general, people are not happy with, but exists because the rules have been rigged so bad for the last 100 years.
Right. So that was your intent. I kind of figured it was your intent to start.
Yeah.
From the illegal immigrants to this land, and then going forward.
So, well, I don't know. Like I said, it's frustrating because, you know, we when people try to defend the current system, it's like, are you a moron? I mean, the answer is typically yes. They don't know their history. It's a matter of what I know, right? What I know to be true is X, Y, Z. And it's like, that's great. So what you know to be true is the stuff that's happened in your lifetime because you didn't learn history. You don't know what happened 20, 30, 40 years before you were here, 100 years before you were here, right? This information is available. It's out there. And it's important. And the problem is that many, many people don't know this stuff. Interesting tangent real quick. So I'm helping out with debate at my daughter's high school, and I helped judge this this week test weekend yesterday. And one of the topics that's out there for one of the divisions and types of debate is the right to be forgotten. And they talk about information becoming irrelevant and how typically in a society, information basically ages out and it just disappears, right? We don't know what the average corn farmer from 500 years ago in some other civilization did on a day-to-day basis because it's not relevant information. But on the internet, information lives forever. And so this is a big philosophical thing. Without getting into the silliness of the topic itself, I think that where this is interesting is that somehow the information about how our country was actually formed and how it actually operated prior to 1925 is like fading away from the national consciousness, that people just don't know this information. And you can go find it immediately available. It's not something that's taught. It's not something that's pushed in history courses. And I think that's a big deal. I think that we need to know where we came from if we're going to solve the problems of where we're going to, right? And that's where it ties into all the other issues going on today, is that we don't even know how we got here. How are we supposed to come up with answers to the problems we have today if we don't know how we got here?
I agree. I think the counterpoint to it, you know, might be that without that knowledge of how things got to be the way that they are right now, all you can do is deal with the now. And that in and of itself is a good thing. Of course, treading only in those waters, you're running the risk of repeating mistakes that were made. And so that's the, in my opinion anyway, the primary takeaway from, you know, knowing and learning, you know, where we came from and how things got to be where they are now, is almost exclusively to avoid mistakes that have already been made.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
but again, I'm going to reiterate that point. The good part about it is people that don't know can only move forward from where we are. By itself,
right,
acknowledging that the present is the only thing that we actually have tangibly to hold on to and do anything with, that's a good thing.
I would disagree with that. I would actually say that you got to know your history or you're going to repeat it, because going into something without knowledge, without the information, means that you're going to take a default humanist or a human, natural human reaction type result, right? I can't think of a really good example of this. I don't know. I mean, it's almost an instinctual thing to respond in a certain way to certain situations. And until you're able to look through history and say, boy, that was a really stupid way of doing things, I should do X, Y, Z in this scenario instead, are you able to not make the mistake because you have the benefits of seeing the mistakes made previously and where those mistakes led to not head down that path again? And I think that's the big issue, is that, you know, we almost went through this once before. You know, this populism, the populist prolonged recession, all that stuff, that's what brought about the progressive era. The progressive era was in many ways brought forth by individual debt and changes in the economy. And these are things that we better darn well know what's about to happen, because my personal belief anyway is that the progressive era fundamentally broke our government and broke our system. That's my opinion. And you know, others can form their own opinion, but unless more people understand what happened, then they're going to be just simply voting on, well, that sounds good to me. I mean, oh, yeah, that sounds great. Without the information of what happened about 100 years ago from now, you know, and whether or not they thought it was good or bad, at least they would have the information and be making an informed choice. Not, well, it sounds good to me, to, well, you know, last time, 100 years ago, we did X, Y, and Z, and this was good and this was bad and whatever. That's my frustration point with that.
Yeah, and I agree with you. But doing my job here as your co-host and playing devil's advocate, like I sometimes find difficult to do, my challenge to you now is, if that is in fact the case, given the fact that we have had this information at our fingertips for so long, Mm-hmm. How do you explain the fact that we have actually, in fact, done exactly what you're saying we wouldn't do if we knew? We have made the same mistake over and over again, and we keep doing that. So explain that.
Well, I think you are correct, and I do think that as a society, we have to be the ones who wake up. You know, there are a lot of people who are quite content to not get involved. There are a lot of people who are quite content to say, you know what, it doesn't matter anyway, I'm not going to get involved. And so what that does is it allows for others who do want to get involved to be louder voices than they necessarily should be or would be otherwise. Not to say they shouldn't have a voice, but that they're louder than what they should be. I believe that part of that issue also then extends to being able to rally up. You know, part of this is an education problem, but some of it is that people just don't care. They don't want to know. And I get that. And this goes, again, back to a fundamental thing about the progressive era and how it broke things. Before the progressive era,
I think you're hitting the nail right on the head, Ken.
Well,
Ed, I agree with you. I believe that I think you answered the question. The question is the unbelievable amount of people that do not want to get involved, and even though they know, they just don't care, or they don't care enough to get involved.
Or they don't believe it'll matter. That's the one I hear a lot. It doesn't matter anyway. I'm like, no, it does matter. I promise you, it matters. Every single voice, it doesn't matter. And we have this issue when people are voting for candidates that, quote-unquote, can't win. They're like, well, it doesn't matter anyway. Yeah, it does. Every voice is louder. It's equalizing the playing field. Every voice is louder. It gives legitimacy. That. But I'll tell you the one thing that's sorely missing today from 100 years ago is the statesman. Statesmanship was killed with the passage of the 17th Amendment. We started directly electing senators rather than having the guy who was supposedly the most respected person in the state house or state government, whatever, being nominated and sent to D.C. as our representative of our state, right? And that was the statesman was the representative of our state, and they then had a part in the check and balances at the federal level where you had the popularly elected congressman and you had the state had a voice in the Senate, and then you had the president elected through the Electoral College. You had three very distinct mechanisms by which people in federal government were there and that a law had to get through a gauntlet of people that were elected in three different ways. It created a nice division of powers. But it also meant that there was a benefit to being a statesman in your own state. To date, there is no benefit. What's the benefit of being a statesman? What do you get out of it? A feel-good feeling? Oh, not doing anything. You're never going to go to the U.S. Senate because of it. You're not going to be remembered in the history books, most likely. And there is no reason to be a statesman. And that's what I believe killed or got killed when they passed the 17th Amendment. But nobody talks about that stuff. And the statesman is the guy we need right now. The statesman's the one that we need to step up and say, listen, we've got some serious freaking problems, and there's going to be some pain to fix them, and here's how we're going to get out of it. And this is the long-term picture, right? But what we have today is congressmen and senators that are worried about getting reelected in either 2, 4, or 6 years, and that's all they care about. That's it.
Right. I agree. It's the statesman is missing, and that is a huge, gigantic problem. Roll back around to what you talked more about after you got through that you know, first part, during the first part of the show. This is related. Everybody knows at this point, all of our listeners know, I'm a willful optimist, so I try to find the silver lining no matter how dark the cloud is. And if there is a silver lining that I've noticed in all of this police brutality stuff that's going on, it's the fact that people are waking up.
Yes.
People are caring. In fact, right now, the second hottest trend on the internet is I can't breathe.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not happy to see that. I absolutely am not happy to see that. But I am glad that people care about what's happening to our society. And that's really what that points out to. This is really, really, this is a very important issue to me. I have two young kids, and I know you've got kids too. Yeah, I've got two young kids at home. And my wife and I, we're trying to raise our kids to be respectful and to be good citizens. You know, good citizenship is something that is extremely important to us.
Yep.
I want my kids to trust the police and those that are supposed to be in society to protect them. But I am running into, my wife and I, and I believe our society in general, is running into huge problems with getting that message across to our children right now in today's day and age. One of them is relatively localized to our family, but I don't think that our situation is unique. And what I'm referring to is my kids are inundated, or have been inundated, with the message from their friends, and also even from adults, not us, but other adults, that the police primary job is to arrest people. And so they're scared of police. And that is really tough nut to crack, because we don't want our kids to be scared of police. You know, and then complicating matters even farther, you have police that abuse their power. Now, it's true that there are police that abuse their power. It's even more true that most of them don't. Okay, it's just flat out true. Most of them don't. For every single, you know, I mean, just think about how many police, you know, police there are in the United States. And think about the stories that you know of right now. Every single officer on duty has some story that could be told every single shift. And how many do we know about? A handful, right? Automatically, that means that most of the stories that we're not hearing are good, or at least neutral. You know, so most police are good. But the police that do abuse their power and do this kind of thing, it just goes nuts. And then, and I'm not saying that it shouldn't be, you know, trending, that we shouldn't be talking about it. On the contrary, but I think the most important part of all of this is what's done about it. When our children see that there are people in positions of power that do, in fact, abuse that power in a way that no other ordinary citizen would possibly get away with, and then go to trial and literally escape everything that they did without even as much as a slap on the wrist. What are we teaching our kids?
Right. And we're running out of time
really,
here.
It's really difficult to deal with, because people are blaming the system. And I understand the sentiment. And it's true. We have a systemic problem here. That is absolutely true. However, as long as we continue to hold the system accountable, the individuals that are perpetrating these heinous acts are going to continue to get away with it, because we unwittingly, by blaming the system, are excusing them, the individual, from their actions.
Well, and you can make an argument.
There's any message. Go ahead.
Wrap it up, because we're out of time.
if there's anything that I want to say, you know, to, you know, the people, it's a thank you for paying attention. Thank you for speaking out about it. But please stop blaming the system and start insisting on accountability from the individuals that abuse the system.
Yeah. All right. Well, and I will say, and Dave, thank you again. I'm going to wrap up very quickly and just say we've got to do better. And I say that a lot at the end of a lot of our shows. But the thing is, we have to do better. Like Dave said, we have to hold the right people accountable. I think we do have to change the system, too. But when there are outright abuses like what happened, I'm telling you, that thing in New York, that it wasn't right. And over stupid cigarette taxes and whatever, it's just idiotic that a man is dead because of an idiotic policy put in place by ding-dong nannies that, you know, think they can run our lives better than we can. Well, all I can tell you is that dude that's dead now, his life isn't any better than what it was before the ding-dong nannies came along. But that's it, folks. We're out of time. Thank you for tuning in. This has been another edition of Liberty on Vinyl. Tune into the other shows on the network Monday through Thursday, 7 p.m. Eastern Time as well. And until next week, I hope you have a good week. Take care, folks. Thanks for tuning in.